Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 27th of October, 2020, and we have a pretty weak market out there. And we'll get to that in a moment. First off, Ola, you are doing a webinar tomorrow on inflation together with a couple of our colleagues. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's primarily Christopher Dembig in Paris, who's our macro strategist, and Althea Spinoci, our bond expert, who will be hosting this webinar. I'll join in a bit because obviously we do have some inflationary pressures right now building in the agricultural space. I'll just touch base on that. But overall, it's just a run through of what sign we should be looking out for. And just recently, we also added inflation linked bonds to the platform. So Althea will just basically run through how to protect your portfolio and hedge against inflation through the tips. So that's the main message. It will kick off tomorrow at 1:30. You can sign up by go to analysis.saxo, or you can also just go directly to webinar.saxo and sign up.
All right, good stuff. And let's go back to the markets. We had a pretty ugly day in the U.S., a few days of sort of hemming and hawing around those key support levels we've been talking about in the NASDAQ 100, the 11,500 to 600 zone, and the S&P, this 3,400 area. We dipped below those yesterday. There was enough of a rally sort of into the close late in the day, especially in the NASDAQ 100, so it wasn't a completely ugly day. But looking a bit nervous, I guess it's the stimulus headlines, which are still refusing to produce the breakthrough that's needed. Are we really going to see something before the election is the question. But you can see on slide two, we're looking at that 55-day moving average is right where we closed on for the S&P 500. And I would argue the next bigger breakdown level, I mean, what can we say about tactical developments when we have this monumental U.S. election coming up next Tuesday? But that 100-day moving average rising up, you see that purple line there. Getting up towards 3,300 soon, and then the 61.8% retracement above that. Those two lines sort of post-election I'd be interested in, and then the final one being the 3,200 plus area, that horizontal line to the downside. And the bigger picture here, and we saw the VIX over 32 yesterday, a new high locally there. If we look at the bigger picture, I have that small inset on slide two, where you see the blue being the S&P 500, and the sort of the dotted black line being the equal weighted S&P 500, an index that traditionally before the global financial crisis in particular was a strong outperformer. So the median stock outperforming the averages back in the day. And you see that never made a new high. It shows you how that's the concentration in the big names that has been the key in this bull market from the COVID-19 lows. Just put that in there for perspective. And then also for perspective, yesterday with that horrible move in SAP, 20% odd loss in SAP on their terrible earnings and outlook, we're seeing the DAX trading on the 200-day moving average. That's right where we found support yesterday. And you can see that chart on slide three. Looks pretty ominous if that index can't piece together some stability and a rally here for possible further losses. Now, and then I'll get back to you. Oh, we've got lots going on in commodities and the commodity space, but I believe I forgot to mention this yesterday on sterling. We see sterling sort of trading down towards the 130 level. A little bit of that is dollar strength. A little bit of it is sterling weakness. But, given that we have these negotiations ongoing till tomorrow in London, and given that just the terrible structural backdrop for the UK from the COVID-19 impact, from its long-term structural deficits and any stimulus they do, who's financing that besides the BOE printing money? I just wonder if we could risk sterling going lower, even if we do see a deal here. So I would encourage folks with exposure to sterling downside in particular, but even as a punt on the speculative side, to consider what if we get a deal but no real sterling rally. And the trick will be whether it's worth trading it in cable or in euro sterling. Either way, I think I'm thinking that sterling has a very low ceiling on a breakthrough. And at worst, we get a deal and there's just no support. And if that is happening, you can even wait for that deal announcement to be had. And if you don't get the desired uptick in sterling, that might be the moment to strike on a bearish move in that currency. And then I'll wrap off the currency discussion. I just want to point out the Turkish lira really struggling here. It's down well below 8 against the dollar. So dollar try hitting 8.15 this morning. and that's up from, 785 or so just a few days ago. On, first of all, the Turkish Central Bank not hiking rates last week, which was expected, but also they've been getting into all kinds of diplomatic trouble with various key allies, really, or nominal supposed allies anyway, testing a Russian missile system, which has raised the U.S.'s ire, but also this spat with France, who recalled their ambassador from Turkey. This after Macron made some statements after the murder of the beheading of a teacher who had shown cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, and then Erdogan's criticism of Macron's stance on that matter and saying that the man needed to seek psychiatric help. So pretty counterproductive behavior for the Turkish lira, which is heading to new lows. Quite considerable structural concerns there. Now, Ola, I think there's kind of a lot shaking here in the commodity market. It's been interesting to see. We had copper on that blistering run. At the same time, you're pointing out a correlation with the Chinese yuan, which is weakened, and copper has weakened as well. But you're seeing apparently a correlation there.
Yeah, there has been quite a strong correlation, in at least for the past few weeks, John. We saw that that recent high in copper that we, well, that was from last week when we broke the previous high at 312 and raced up to above 320. That was really that's a strengthening move we had in the renminbi at the same time that helped drive it. And it is obviously due to the fact that copper demand is predominantly coming from China right now, and so anything that happens on the currency tends to have a spillover effect on some of the commodities as well. So since then, since the, well, what was that, middle of last week, the renminbi has seen a bit of weakness after that strong run, and that really has just tied in with the correction we've seen at the same time in copper. Part of that story is probably also due to the lack of stimulus progress in talks in Washington that has also sapped the market, and obviously the continued rise in COVID-19 cases both in Europe and in the US is obviously, for now at least, holding back some of these commodities. And I think adding to this, if you look at copper specifically here on slide 6, I've added the speculative length. Just last week, when the market ran up, we saw the net long reach the highest level since January 2018. So obviously quite a bit of an elevated position there right now, which is also adding some pressure to the downside. So the focus level right now, I think, is the 312 area. That was the previous high back from September, which we broke above, which is now back below again. So that one is key. But and then obviously another market which is not so much dependent on currencies, more depending on weather and how much getting some food in the stomach, is the whole grain sector. On slide 7, I just highlight this continued rally we've seen in grains. I've inserted one of the ETFs that tracks the Bloomberg Grains Index, and you can see we've seen a more or less non-stop rally now since July, August. And it also means two things: that the speculative length is now at the highest since 2012, if you look at the grain and soybean sector combined. So that's obviously quite elevated. That length need to be fed constant positive news, and that's obviously the positive news has been weak or lack of rain in South America and in Eastern Europe recently, and we're just seeing some early signs that at least in Russia, that parts of Russia is now getting some rain, which is almost at the last minute. But another indicator is the RSIs that are put in the top left. You can see some of these markets on our soybeans, 14% above its 100-day moving average, soy meal 22% above, and corn 18%. So we've really seen some massive moves away from some of these longer averages, and that potentially will start to add as a bit of a drag on the market. But for now, momentum remains firm. But just keep an eye on the technical outlook, because there is some emerging risk that we could see some profit taking, or at least a period of consolidation.
All right, and shifting gears a bit, you popped in this graphic from Bloomberg on this Ant Group IPO, which is forthcoming. It's going to be the largest in terms of funds raised by an IPO in history. Estimated, what is it, $35-ish billion, compared even to other companies like Alibaba, Saudi Aramco, and all the way down Visa at less than $20 billion. So that'd be highly anticipated. I guess the news is that they finally put a date on it, this being November 5th. So that is next Thursday. We'll of course have Peter Garnery here to talk us through this. Our equity strategist, he's not here today for this podcast, and to take a look at how this listing is going to unfold.
And it basically just looks like it's almost a must-have for investors in Asia at least, which where the an initial offering or just when this the stuck the finger in the ground just to test the appetite among investors, the it was subscribed something like 250 times the allocation. So it obviously is expected to fly out the door. Banks in Hong Kong are offering a 20-time leverage on for retail investors, clearly indicating that they think it's going to fly out the door. And be quite stable after the initial IPO, but it is called the Amazon of money, so that it will attract a lot of attention. Just also given the sheer size, remember Saudi Aramco last year with a 30 billion IPO, that was obviously the biggest the world had seen at that stage. But Alibaba and Jack Ma, they are back on top now with the Ant Group.
All right. Now, I'll be putting a piece out later today on the U.S. election, some thoughts that I have, and everything is a sort of a spectrum, along a spectrum of probabilities. But my key point may be, not maybe, my key point will be that we may see, actually, the pollsters have maybe erred in the opposite direction of 2016, if we see a considerable turnout. And so it's turnout I'll be trying to track. That's been very difficult to see because we all knew that this early voting coming in would be sizable, and that would mean that the actual turnout on election day will be less. Well, how much less is that? We don't know. Still, just on slide 9, and I'll be including a graphic like this in what I'm writing later today, shows Texas this for this cycle, so in the 2020 election, early in-person voting plus the mail-in voting, which is quite small in Texas because it's more difficult there and you have to have an excuse. So it's actually only 10% of the total so far, ish, is at 82.3%, and that's only through Sunday. And they have a full 5 days here this week of more early voting they can do before Election Day. So we could be getting close to 100% on Texas in terms of voter turnout before Election Day. If that marginal person turning out, who is that person? That is the number one key. If Texas is going to the Democrats, this will be an absolute landslide victory for the Democrats in all likelihood, because Texas is considered quite far down the list of possible battleground states relative to, for example, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, those three nail-biter states we saw in 2016 that barely went to Trump and therefore decided the election despite his 2 million or almost 3 million popular vote deficit. So I'll be talking about that in a piece later today, but watching this thing with interest, is it because opening up for the early voting, also made it just easier to vote in general, and all the coverage that Texas is in play is also motivating the marginal Trump voter to get out and vote? I don't know, but I think it's probably leans better for the Democrats, a turnout situation. And Texas, keep in mind, is traditionally one of the very bottom dwellers in terms of voter turnout. I think part of that because people consider it not likely to be much drama in terms of the actual result, whereas there's far more drama, it looks like, this time around. So an interesting story to track as we're running the final week ahead of U.S. Election Day. And then on slide 10, we have our list of earnings, just absolute, massive blitz of earnings. Today, we have Microsoft up and Ping An for in terms of the big cap companies, a couple of drug companies as well. But Thursday is the main haul. And Peter Garnery, our equity strategist, raising the question yesterday whether there could be a little bit of focus on weakness in the cloud after both Intel and Germany's SAP indicated some weakness in their cloud-related business. Then let's go to the calendar. We've got October consumer confidence out of the U.S. I guess I would highlight that. And then overnight, Australian Q3 CPI, any bets on the Aussie relative to some of the crosses on RBA thoughts as we're heading into what looks like will be a key meeting for the RBA in terms of actual new policy moves. Certainly a new QE program is priced in there, as well as a rate cut. Will it cut to zero or just to 10 basis points? That's all in play for next week on the same day as we have the U.S. election. And then we have the Bank of Canada tomorrow. I don't have any expectations there, but we'll cover that, of course. The ECB meeting discussed that yesterday, and PCE inflation. Very important, maybe not this particular release, but just the U.S. inflation picture is so critical as the months go by, because the market has placed such a huge macro bet on a negative real rates in the U.S. continuing. And that story will need to be buttressed in the actual data for those bets to pay off. So that would be an interesting release as well. But of course, it's a big weight to the U.S. election is the main thing. Yes, Sola.
Yeah, then obviously we got the Chinese plenum ongoing, and once we have some more news from that, we may try to entice Steen Jakobsen into the call and get a run through some of the key takeaways there.
We'll definitely have to do that. All right, I think we're running a bit late today because of various reasons, so we'll call it a day, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call for today. Thanks for joining.